Welcome to Pastor Aggressive Podcast. Real life.
Real faith. Real talk. Bro, it's been like 16 weeks since we did a podcast.
It's been a long time. So we recorded a bunch and like had this back catalog. We were ready to go. I thought we were good for like several months. And then we just didn't record any for a while. But
yeah.
There's a lot going on. So.
Yeah, you went on a pastor vacation paid for by the church.
I did. I went on a 20th wedding anniversary cruise with my wife for putting up with me for 20 years. And that was funded by her dad's estate. So,
nice.
Yeah, it was not. We were responsible with that. We tried to make it really not be church money. You know what I'm saying? We weren't trying to get the church to pay for us to go on a cruise.
Could've.
However, I should write it off on my taxes as a working vacation, because dude, I'm just sitting on the hot tub in the cruise, like trying to chill, trying to relax. Tiffany tells everybody we meet that I'm a pastor, and then they're like Chunk in that scene from The Goonies when they're like, "Tell us everything you've ever done," and he's like, "This one time." That's like what was happening to me in the hot tub. People would be like, "Oh, you're a pastor? Well, I did some really terrible things." And it's just like they were treating the hot tub like a confession booth, dude.
I would love to have seen your face while that was happening. You're like water baptizing people in the hot tub.
There's this one hot tub that was way, way, way too hot. And that would have been, I don't know, that would have been probably problematic. Be like, this is what hell's going to be like if you don't get your life right.
That's like when they talk about how God like works you out and he like refines, they compare it to like gold where they refine. You're literally about to do that with people.
Boil the sins out.
You're like doing them like John.
It's like telling people you're.
I got nothing for that. Doing them like John. Bro.
Oh, that's right. They did try to boil
him. Yeah, they did, bro.
And then he never died. So I actually just got back from, we did that and then we did camp, but I want to talk about my trip a little bit because I went to Rome and got to see some awesome things. All these beautiful cathedrals, super Catholic stuff everywhere. You would have loved it. They had so much Catholicism in Italy, Rome especially. And one day we did go to the Vatican and, It was crazy because you go into like this huge museum where they've conquered people for centuries, and there's all these statues from different cultures and all this artwork and crazy stuff
like pagan stuff.
Some pagan stuff. There's like legit mummies in there and like Egyptian statues
in the Vatican.
Yeah, in their museum. And then all these Greek god statues and stuff and crazy stuff like that. But the best part is when you get into like you're on your way to the Sistine Chapel, which you have to go through this huge museum to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this like guards everywhere. I got this really great picture of this guard napping. I'm like, bro's doing the Lord's work right now, protecting all these stolen treasures. He's
practicing Sabbath.
Yeah, he sure was. But anyway, is this beautiful artwork and just incredible stuff. There's these really cool tapestries. There's this one that I loved. It was like this rug that someone had made that was like Jesus rising from the grave. And he had like this this flag and he's doing like the Trinity symbol with his hand. And these Roman centurions are all like blown out all over the floor. It was awesome.
Dude. It was
super cool.
I'm so upset you didn't bring me back any souvenirs, bro.
Oh, I did, but I'll give it to you after I get up.
You got me a souvenir?
I did.
Is it a statue of David?
No, it wasn't.
Or at least part of it.
No, no.
You know what part I'm talking about.
Tiffany did get her sister a wine cork that is just the bottom half of the statue of David.
That's horrible, dude.
It's terrible, dude.
Is that blasphemy?
But those things, dude, those things are all over the place. Them little marble wee-wees all over.
You fit in great, didn't you?
The best thing, one of the funniest things is I wore this super reformed outfit to the Vatican. I had my like Yahweh Hebrew shirt on and my Saved by Grace hat.
Yeah.
And I sent it to you and I said, I'm about to enter the Vatican and check my fit. And you said, you're going to have the Jews and the Catholics up in arms. And I sent you a picture of a statue whose arms had fallen off and its PP had fallen off. And I was like, this dude's not going to be in arms because he didn't have it. Also, he's missing his Peter.
That's like Paul when Peter got released out of prison before him.
Yeah.
That was a weak joke.
But I did go to the prison where...
Oh, no. What I responded to you with, now that's a biblical Peter.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I said. That's right, my bad. So you went to the prison?
Yeah, and that was my favorite part, for sure. That was just a beautiful... I got down there, and it's like so quiet and so peaceful, and I was by myself in this room where Paul wrote like half of his epistles, where Peter wrote 1st and 2nd Peter. Probably not where he told Mark to write it, but, you know, you get the idea. And it was just incredible seeing these places that they've been. But anyway, we're going through the Vatican Museum. And security everywhere. And the Vatican security, dude, they are rough. They are so mean and, like,
really?
So no-nonsense. It is crazy. But this one guy, as we're coming through this door, he's saying something, and I thought it was a Gregorian chant because he's so monotone.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out he was just saying, don't stand in the doorway to take a picture. But it cracked me up because Tiffany and I both thought it was somebody, like, chanting because of the way he was saying it. So, like, every doorway we'd go through, I would then, like, Gregorian chant, and I would go, don't stand at a door to take out a picture. Amen.
You're an idiot.
It was so good.
You're an idiot. Yeah. That's good, though.
That was good. That's how this dude sounded, but he was just telling people not to stand in the doorway to take pictures. Because it was getting congested. It was packed house.
Why does the church do that? Why do they, like, sing the words they say?
I'm not sure.
I never understood that.
Not entirely sure. But it was
pretty cool. He is risen from the grave.
But then they I was a little bit bad because you get in the Sistine Chapel and they tell you, you know, it's a holy place, be quiet, don't take any pictures.
You're like, "Dude, this is sick."
But it's the Sistine Chapel, like Michelangelo painted this ceiling.
Yeah.
Which is super impressive given that he's a turtle. Anyway,
you're an idiot,
but like, you're not like, who's not going to take a picture of that? So everybody's taking pictures. So I had my phone down like this and was like taking selfie up shots to get the pictures of the ceiling. And I was thinking,
you're not allowed to like take pictures.
You're not supposed to take pictures. But I was like, also, I was like, thanks to Martin Luther, the Pope's not my boss anyway, so I don't care what they say. I'm going to take these pictures.
You're like taking the pictures, and you're like, it's your stomach is in the picture.
It's just like my three chins. Yeah, it was a good trip, man. It was a lot of fun.
How do you feel now that you're back? Was it good to have a break just to get away for a little bit?
Yeah, it was. I was super relaxed, and then I came back and immediately went to camp, which was kind of stressful for me.
Yeah.
I'm now kind of back to normal.
Yeah.
I was super relaxed from vacation and then mega stressed out because of camp. And so now I'm kind of like mellowed out. Everything's even.
You didn't seem that stressed out at camp. I'll be honest with you. I've seen you more like in control. And since God's been trying to teach you that, man, I've been seeing big changes in that. So I think you handled it well, man. I didn't really have a lot of weight there, but we should get into that.
Because I felt pretty stressed, but I tried to be chill.
So, Warner gets back from vacation, then immediately that Sunday. When do you get back? Saturday?
I got back Saturday, yeah.
So, Sunday night, we get to this church camp that we've had planned for a while. And this is my first time ever at a church camp. And
never?
I was
like you didn't ever go as a kid or anything?
Never. Never. That's been to crazy. A church camp. And Warner invited me to be a counselor. And I was thinking about that on the way here. I was like, it's kind of crazy that you trust me to do things like that. Because I'm so like young in the faith and all this and that. But anyway, let's talk about...
I knew that you could connect. I knew you'd be able to connect with them.
Yeah.
That was like my main thing.
Yeah. So we do this church camp. And I have no idea what I'm doing there. But it was awesome. The whole entire thing was awesome. We had a really good time. We probably can't talk about too much of it.
Yeah. We can talk about it in generalities. We just can't like name names or like maybe the issues kids were dealing with. But
yeah, I'll say the overwhelming.
Yeah, share a little bit about your experience real quick.
It wasn't anything like what I expected. There was immense vulnerability, immense intentionality. Which I've kind of gotten good at orchestrating vulnerability.
Yeah.
And you, because you said to me, you were like, normally things open up on Wednesday and Thursday. And I heard you say that, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna try to speed the process up a little bit.
Well, and having you there did help speed that process up, but also I did something different by having a speaker the first night.
Yeah.
For the fire, which I don't normally do.
Yeah.
And I think that helps too. But I didn't know that you had already been doing some work
on the front side. I was working a little bit
with that first small group meeting.
And it was a really small group. It was just two guys. But yeah, those papers you gave me, I don't think I asked a single question off those things.
Yeah.
And some of our conversations were completely off topic. But something I realized was, like, you and I had people in our lives to answer those hard questions, right?
Yeah.
It was probably the same person. Your dad answered a lot of those hard questions for me.
Yeah.
And that's how I came into the faith, because I had all these preconceived notions about Christianity and Christians that he explained away for me and gave me the truth. And that's what I want to do with these kids, is they probably don't have a lot of people to ask questions to, you know? I talk to these kids now, even after camp, and I'm on the game last night with one of the kids, and I'm going to be explicit here because this is what he said. They're throwing a party, right? And he's like, yeah, we're throwing this rager. And he's like talking to somebody else, and he's like, there's going to be hella Center Grove bitches there. He said that, and I'm like, I said his name. I'm like, come on, bro. Like, you're literally on the mic with me. This is the life that they're living day in and day out.
Yeah.
And I was living that life.
Yeah.
So they come to this camp, and it's just like a culture shock. But they realize, and we realize when we are in environments like that, that that's what we want. We want that immense connection that just, like, you just feel the presence of God, really, because you're focused on him. And I wanted to nail that in on those kids, man, and be like, it's not gone after you leave here.
Yeah, right.
And we got to be real vulnerable about our lives and how we're not much, especially me, I'm barely even older than these guys. I'm like, I'm not much different than you guys at all. At all. I struggle with the same things you guys are struggling with now. Struggled with the same things you guys are struggling with. And it was just cool to be able to testify about how God's worked in my life and the things he's doing, man. It was so good for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I really needed this kick in the butt, because I've been real complacent lately, smoking weed and porn and all this stuff. Like, I lost my heart for God, man.
Yeah.
I really did, bro.
It's tough. I mean, that's something that it kind of is the same with the vacation thing, right? Like, I went away, got all relaxed, got all chilled out, and then came right back into life and, like,
yeah,
forgot about, like, being sweet to my wife, because we're back home and it's like, now we're mom and dad again. And,
yeah.
And we've got all our, like, work stuff to do and then camp and all that. So it's like, it's hard. Like, we do that with every aspect of our life, where we compartmentalize things. And then the things that are important, we, like, take a breath, get away from all the distractions and be like, oh yeah, this is the real thing.
Yeah.
It's the, what we call real life. That's the fake stuff.
Exactly.
And it's trying to find out how to, like, keep the real thing the real thing and not be caught up in all the distraction.
And you realize how unimportant the rest of it is, man.
Yeah.
Like, my job, my career, we had some guys there that really love to talk about their jobs and careers, but
yeah,
like, there it means nothing. These kids don't need to know about what I do for work or this or that. They just needed to see Christ in me. They needed to see Christ in you. And I heard tons of testimonies from those kids about how they saw you dealing with raw emotion in the moment and turning it into and more giving it to God.
Yeah.
In prayer. And those kids, they saw that. And them seeing us struggle with real life things in the moment. When one of the kids we were having a trick contest, and he front flips off this diving board and lands on his chest.
Yeah.
And he got seriously hurt, bro.
Yeah.
And I cried the whole way back on the bus. Yeah. I had my swim shirt over my head. I was just crying like a little girl, and I was like, I couldn't focus the rest of the day. I was just down. I didn't want to play games. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do that. And those kids were there for me.
Yeah.
Those kids were asking me how I'm doing and this and that.
Yeah.
And they got to see me deal with raw emotion. And then, praise God, bro, that kid, he wanted to be back. He got back there right on time, bro.
Yeah.
Right on time. Right on God's timing.
Yeah.
And I was just praying the whole time. I'm like, it was him getting hurt that broke my heart, but also him missing out, knowing the things he was dealing with, him missing out on the things that were about to happen.
Yeah.
The big things, like the focal point of the camp.
Yeah.
These kids love, like, the, what is that thing, capture the flag.
Yeah.
But what we love is this very vulnerable, what turned into an 8-hour event that touches hearts for real.
That was crazy, man.
Can we talk on that a little bit?
Yeah. So when we do the camp, we do this prayer hike, which it's like all the counselors are down on the trail.
Yeah.
I take these kids up on a mountain like I'm going to sacrifice like Isaac.
You like have like a ritual knife. You're like, all right, start walking, kids.
No, we take them all up on this on the top of the hill, and then they go down the trail to the bottom of the hill that eventually leads to the fire where we have the campfire area. Yeah. And they just hang out at the campfire area until everybody gets through. And I try to keep it really organized, and I wasn't able to get, because I had to be at the hospital with the kid that got hurt, I was away from the team for like a good, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. Yeah. And so I wasn't able to connect and like make the plan and like tell you guys all what it was going to look like and how we were going to do it. And I wasn't able to like order and orchestrate things as much as I would have liked to. Cause you know me, I like to plan things. I like to over plan things. And so I wasn't able to do that. And the result was I'm up at the top of the hill with sending the kids down one by one, and they're going down, and each one of the counselors gets to pray with the kids, talk to them about some stuff, and then pass them on to the next person. And then the next kid comes down. We're supposed to do this with like 20 plus kids, get them through this thing.
Yeah.
And I always plan for in my head, like 2-2.5 hours. That's what I expect as far as like how long it's going to take. And it took us 4.5 hours to get everyone from the top all the way through the trail.
Yeah.
And I was panicking and flipping out because I'm like, we're going to lose momentum. The kids aren't going to get much out of it. The kids that have been through it, and then now they're sitting at the fire for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're not going to, when we get back, they're not going to still be, they're going to be out of the moment.
Yeah.
And then the kids that are up here are getting frustrated because they're waiting. Yeah. And I'm like, this is terrible. The only ones that are, this is good for is in the moment, the kids that are on the trail.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, everyone else is going to get lost in this mess of my poor planning. And that was not the case at the fire pit. They all were great. But it was, the frustration was starting to build with the kids at the top.
Yeah.
They're like waiting to go into the trail. And
yeah, I heard one of them yell, one of the girls yell. They're like, we've been waiting for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. And she was like, I don't even want to do this anymore. And so it was like getting to a point where it was getting frustrating. But once it got to the point where it was just me and the guys up there.
Yeah.
They could tell I was frustrated, and I was like, all right, we're going to huddle up, and this is, you guys get a special treat for being the ones that waited the longest. We're going to pray together about what's happening right now.
Yeah.
About our emotions, about our anger and frustration, about the people who are down there getting prayed for right now. And that really seemed to, I didn't get to talk to any of them about it afterwards, but it seemed like that really kind of changed the atmosphere for them.
And I'll tell you from firsthand account, even that girl that I heard yelling, I knew who it was. She came down, and she wasn't out of it, man.
Yeah.
We had a great conversation, a great time together. She told me that her and this boy were finally together. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like turning up. I was so happy for her. And the kids coming down after, they were totally not out of it. Would you do it any other way again?
I would just probably have the discussion with the counselors of what it is, because I told you this after the fact, but like the idea is like that is not the event, that's the lead up to the event, and like what happens at the campfire is supposed to be like processing all of what happened in those conversations, right? So I would just like maybe try to help guide the conversation, like maybe like these are the key things we want to try to focus on. But I don't know. I don't know that it needs to change, really.
I'll be honest, man. And this is just what my heart's telling me. I don't think it could have gone another way, bro.
Yeah.
I think it went the way God wanted it to go.
Oh, well, yeah.
I think, and I'm not saying that like some like I'm just some sleazebag, like just like leaning back on it. It's just like really, like we had impactful conversations, and we weren't like talking about useless stuff. Every conversation I had with each one of those girls and boys was real. It was hard conversation, and I literally had no thought in my mind of hurrying them up.
Yeah.
None at all. Shay, our other, we could talk about the counselors, right? Shay, our other counselor, was chilling.
Yeah.
Didn't seem stressed or anything. Yeah. Ben was chilling.
I have, like, Shay is one of my favorite people to have around me in that environment because he does such a good job of balancing out my, like, high maintenance stress level with his just like, okay, well, we'll just go with whatever.
And he, dude, just talking to that guy, he is a guy who's really centered himself around slowing down.
Yeah.
And that's something he was vulnerable about is that's still something he's trying to do. So this guy shows up, he's ready. I'm in like swim trunk. I didn't even get a chance to change.
Yeah.
I'm like in swim trunks and
he's got a backpack and hiking boots. Yeah. And he's like, he's all done up. But like that's, he's always prepared, but he's always like, I think part of him being prepared is why he doesn't stress.
Yes.
It's because he's like, I've got, like, I know that this is all going to work out. I've got everything. If in case something goes wrong, I'm prepared for it. But he just does, he does an excellent job of just making me feel like everything's going to be okay, even if it's like a stressful situation.
Yeah.
Like when he got us lost on the hike.
Not us. He got, not us including you. He got us lost. Yeah. And we did this whole extra hike up this hill. And I'm like, oh, good. That was a short hike. Nope.
Yeah, that was just the beginning.
Straight back to it. But the reason I have this Dewey on is because we were Dewey ganged up on that trail, dude.
Yeah.
We were having a good time. This whole like stupid, it's stupid, but it's the way God just chose to like open us all up to each other and just be goofy and fun. We, one night, somebody got me like twin sheets, right?
Yeah.
And I couldn't get the bag open. I couldn't figure out how to open it, so I just cut it.
Yeah.
And I cut it open, and I'm like, dude, this looks like a do-rag.
Yeah.
And I'll put it on my head, and all the kids were making jokes about the Dewey and all this and that. So John, was he like the...
He's like camp board president.
Just a chill dude, just in the background, but super like Holy Spirit filled and just...
Yeah.
Like just thinking about God the whole time. So he comes up to me, he's like, hey, I can go run and grab those if you want.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, are you serious right now? He paid for it with the church camp money, went to Walmart. Now imagine this old guy. How old is he? Like 60 something probably?
Yeah.
With long hair.
I think he bought them himself.
Yeah.
Like he bought it out of his like his own pocket.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, yeah.
Dang, dude.
Yeah.
This old guy goes into Walmart and buys out all their do-rags, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he gets them back right before we have to leave.
Yeah.
So I walk on the bus, Dewey'd up, bro. Just Dewey's in my hand, just handing out Dewey's left and right, and everybody has Dewey's on, and we all have do-rag nicknames, like, I can't say them, but we got all these do-rag nicknames. Yeah, the kids, they're like talking hood, but they're not acting crazy. Like, have you ever heard that song, 20-inch blades on the Impala, Impala getting lit tonight? We're like singing this song, hiking like a Gregorian chant from the east side of Indianapolis, like going up this hill, bro. And it was just awesome, bro, the way the kids got to goof around and be silly and and be fun, bro. And man, it was such a good time, bro.
Yeah, it really was. And now we're back to life, back to normal life.
Back to normal life.
Back to the grind of making sure our podcast fans get all this great content.
But we wanted to talk about intentionality.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think of what the word was that you had used when we were talking about what we were going to talk about today. Intentionality, yeah.
Let's talk about your sermon from today because I think it really connects.
Yeah, because this morning I preached from Malachi chapter 1 about like how God is like, he is the perfect father, and yet we don't honor him like a father sometimes, and that the worship that we give is like sometimes second rate or half-hearted.
Yeah, I want to use the word half A-S-S-E-D.
Dude, I know. Imagine me having to say half-hearted 3,000 times today at church and trying to not say that. Like, dude, it was about to come out a couple times.
If I got passionate enough about it, I might have just let it rip, dude. Just
yeah, I was getting. But I mean, that's what it is. It's that's a real thing that we do. And but we'll make excuses as to why that's not the case. We'll be like, well, this is all I have to give, or God made me this busy, so I don't have time to do what I'm supposed to do. And that would be a very easy thing for us to do, especially in my position where I'm doing like ministry stuff all the time.
Yeah.
To be like, well, I'm just so busy, but God's given me this stuff to be busy, so I don't have time for like personal devotion. Would be ridiculous to say, but would be something that like could like I could self-justify,
right?
Because I'm like, well, I'm in the Word a lot because I'm preparing a sermon, but how often am I in the Word for myself?
Yeah, I could have justified not coming to this church camp. I literally like went through this whole spout of like quitting my job and then not quitting my job and then finally quitting my job.
Yeah,
and took the second week off at my new job to go do this church camp. Yeah. And I'm not getting paid for it. I'm probably not gonna make my bills this month. Mm. But like, I have no regret, bro. None at all. And it's not like about what I did. God just like, it was like he put a sure thing on my heart that was going to happen whether what predicament I'm in or not. But we got to be really careful that we're like intentionally serving God. And even like, why am I going to this church camp?
Yeah.
Why am I going to church? Why am I singing this worship song with the rest of the church? I'll be honest, you said something about that in your sermon. And when I first started coming to church, I didn't sing because I was embarrassed. And then I started to sing because other people were singing.
Yeah.
And only after this church camp am I now singing because I'm singing to God.
Yeah.
Just now.
Yeah.
Just now in my faith.
Well, and I even mentioned this in the sermon too, but I was talking about how there's that like that guy on TikTok that is like, he's like been bashing the band Bloodlines, saying that like...
Do they have a song called Pray? Where it's like, just pray. Dun-dun-dun.
Maybe.
I feel like I listen to them.
But they're awesome, and their lyrics are so, so good. And when you watch them, when you watch their videos, and you see the way that they're praying, there's two bands that are like this. Well, there's like several bands, but Bloodlines is one of them that like sticks out in my mind. And I see like their lyrics are so good, and the intentionality behind their worship is very clear.
Yeah.
But then this guy's like saying it's demonic or whatever, and I'm like, I don't know how you could even say that. Like, maybe if all you're doing is hearing it and you just don't understand what it is. But it's like when you see these guys performing this, like that's clearly for the Lord, and the way that they're worshiping, it's just like that has to be holy. There's something holy about that and reverent about that.
Do you think it could be a correlation with how we use that type of music like in horror movies and stuff where there's like a horror scene happening and there's like hard music like that?
It could be.
And people like draw those lines, but it's like that literally does not matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how slow the song. Honestly, I was uncomfortable at the church camp when they were playing like these gig, like what is the word? Like uppity songs, like that church clap song and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I don't know how I feel about this, but to see all the kids interacting and they're like the God, the song is like praising God.
Yeah.
And all these kids are like interacting and this is what they're into.
Yeah.
They're not into the like old hymnals. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're into something new, and those old hymnals were something new to kids one time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like the intentionality, like, do these kids want to worship God? If the answer is yes, then if they sing this church clap song and they dance for God, they sing to God, who are we to like poo-poo on that?
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we can't just say if it wasn't around when Spurgeon was alive, we're not singing it.
Martin Luther nailed the 99 Theses plus one, the church clap song to the Catholic door. Oh, it's a.
That's what, maybe that's what church clap is about. When it's like, let me hear your church clap, and it's like that's the like
the hammer
knocking on the door when Martin Luther's hanging the theses.
I'm not gonna say it, dude, but that joke we were talking about at the Mexican restaurant is really nailing on my head right now.
Yeah, that's pretty fire.
Oh, now we're leaving the podcasters out, but I talked a lot with the kids about like. It's like this fine line to walk in the faith where it's like the faith is about Jesus. It's about God. It's not about church. It's not about the Bible. It's not about this and that. And early on in our time together, I told them, I was like, if you're not reading the Bible for the right reason, if you're not going to church for the right reason, if you're not singing worship songs, if you're not praying for the right reason, and the right reason is to worship God, then don't do it at all.
Yeah.
It's like what you said today. God would rather shut the doors.
Yeah, yeah. In Malachi 1, God says that I wish I could have someone just shut the doors on the temple.
Yeah.
Like he would rather not have worship at all than crummy worship that's not intentional.
Yeah, and a lot of these kids don't hear hard stuff like that. Yeah. I showed them. I have this pamphlet from your dad. It's called How to Be Saved or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I keep it in my car. And I showed it to them, and they were reading that, and they're like, man, that's hard. That's rough, because it's from Romans. It starts in Romans saying that none of us are good.
Yeah.
And it's like those kids had never heard that before. And these kids grew up in church. They're at church camps all the time. They have never heard the hardness of God. God can be hard on us sometimes.
Yeah.
Hard in the sense that the truth is hard. The truth is that you're not good.
Yeah.
You're not. I heard so much about good people when I was at church camp.
Yeah.
And we have to walk this other fine line between there are like culturally good people. It's okay for me to say that Warner's a good dude, right? Yeah. But I shouldn't feel like I'm a good dude in my heart. A good dude.
Right, a good dude. A holy person.
Yeah.
But there's also some divinity in the way we were created to bear God's image.
Right.
And so, like, we also don't want to completely deflate that.
Yeah. Especially these kids that are dealing with stuff that they should never be dealing with.
Yeah.
Where it's like, the truth is, sometimes you are a product of your environment, bro.
I love some of the questions that you guys came back with that you were saying the kids were asking you. Like I talked about, I'm going to preach the same one at junior high camp next week. I'm only going for one day, though. So.
Good.
I'm not going to take the whole week. But about when I was talking about how, like, the broken mirror.
Yeah.
And how, like, we're all meant to reflect the holy creator God, but we're like broken mirrors. And if you look in a broken mirror, what you see is not what is actually there.
Yeah.
And one of the kids had asked you guys, what do you see when you look in the broken mirror? Yeah. And I was like, man, what a deep question for just like a 14, 15-year-old kid.
From a kid that seemed tapped out.
Yeah, yeah.
From a kid that seemed far away from the conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes those kids are listening the hardest.
Yeah.
So it was cool that he asked us that question right back to vulnerability.
Yeah.
That we got to tell those kids, like all the kids in the bunks, they're laying, they're tired, but they're listening.
Yeah.
Tell them like what it really looks like. What it really feels like to be a Christian. What it really feels like to look at yourself and not see God sometimes. Yeah. But the interesting thing about the broken mirror question is that those things are untrue about you.
Yeah.
Untrue in the sense that the truth is that I'm made in the image of God.
Yeah.
And the untruth is that I've distorted that a little bit.
Yeah.
But the truth is that I'm a child of God. Our theme song, I like have it stuck in my head now.
Yeah.
And it sounds corny to like reiterate saying I'm a child of God as an adult.
Yeah.
But you reiterate it so much that it really sinks in and you're like, wait, even the 75-year-old guy is a child of God.
Yeah.
Is a son to God, a brother to Jesus.
Yeah. Think of the privilege that like kids and royal families have just inherently, right?
Yeah.
And that applies to our spiritual privilege of being a child of the King.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's something that I think we take for granted way too often.
Yeah. Yeah, we get so caught up in the broken parts of ourselves that I had to tell a lot of kids that. Like, I'm telling kids stuff. I was reading Romans yesterday, and Paul's like, you don't preach this, or the things you preach to other people, do you not preach it to yourself?
Yeah.
I'm telling these kids, I'm like, your identity is not in this thing you did when you were 12, not in this thing you did when a couple years ago, or this or that, or this mistake you made. Your identity is and forever will be in Christ.
Yeah.
Your identity is not you, it's Christ.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard thing to explain to these kids. I told them, I was like, if you guys take one thing away from this camp, forget about yourself.
Yeah.
Forget about you. All these kids are anxious to share. They're anxious to talk. And I was the same way. It's because you think about you all the time. You. Just forget about yourself, bro. You are nothing. You aren't who you think you are.
Right.
You are his. Oh. It was so cool. It was like God was giving me words for those kids that were from me.
Yeah.
And that's the coolest thing about just being obedient to God, man, is that even in serving other people, every time I've experienced serving other people, it served me more than it served them. And those kids hear that and they're like, whatever, bro. Like, yeah. But I really had to hammer it down on them. Like, guys, like really, this is more meaningful for us than, I don't know how meaningful it is for you guys, but I know it's a heck of a lot of meaning for us.
Yeah. So how do you think we can be more intentional with our worship? Like, what does that look like practically?
I think we have to stay connected with God. So if I spend my whole week disconnected from God,
yeah,
then I come to church and expect to be intentional, expect to be connected with God. It's like I have to re-find my connection. It's like this church camp thing. Kids feel like they have to re-find their connection with God every year when they go to church camp.
Right, right.
It's not that. We're just fumbling the bag when we leave.
Right, right. Oh, man.
So yesterday, I'm playing the game, and like you're like waiting to get in a game, you know? So normally I'm like scrolling on YouTube Shorts or something, and I'm like conscious. You lose that consciousness of like knowing when you're going too far, and that's how you fall into that trap. I'm like conscious right now, so I'm like, oh, let me put this down and just read the Bible.
Yeah.
Why not kill time reading the Bible? It's less killing your time and giving life to your time. So, like, how am I more intentional about taking things away that are taking me from God? Literally, like, when you're on social media scrolling, we all experience this, you're taken away from reality. Yeah. You come out of it, and you're, like, dazed. It's almost like you're on a drug.
We were talking to Shay about how his pastor was talking about, like, how the Quakers banned playing cards.
Yeah.
and we were like, that's a little extreme. Like, we play cards a lot and stuff. But, like, their reasoning behind it was actually really good. Because in those, like, in that time, that was the thing that distracted. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they didn't have all of the distractions we have now with, like, you know, social media and all this.
Yeah.
But it was like, if you have time, it's like, you know, that old saying when you're at a job and they'll say, it's like, if you have time to lean, you have time to clean.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have time to take a break, then you have time to be in the Word.
Right.
Or you have time to be in prayer with God. And it's like, how often do we take advantage of that time rather than just like wasting it?
I'm going to pose a question. I don't know the answer. I could be totally wrong on this. When he was explaining that, he said something about, like, his pastor was, like, reading the Bible 16 hours a day or something, and I'm like, first of all, that's totally probably not true, and second of all, like, is that something we should be doing?
I think if you're not, again, though, if you're just doing it just to do it, then I don't think that's healthy either, because yeah. It's that empty worship, it's that empty praise, it's like, if you're just singing the song because everybody else is, but your heart's not singing the song, then it's not.
If you're doing your 15-minute devotional a day just because it's schedule or routine.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
But also, there's healthy things about routine. A lot of guys talk about, like, the answer to some of these problems are getting into a routine of doing this or that. But I don't know. There's, like, a scary line to walk for me personally in that. Like, if I'm just reading the Bible, just read the Bible. That's why I get hung up on reading the Old Testament sometimes, because, like, sometimes I'm reading it and I'm not really getting anything. That's a bad thing to say. I'm not getting anything out of it.
Yeah.
I got to think about what I just said. It's like, why am I reading the Old Testament?
Right.
And sometimes I don't know why. Is it so I can complete the Bible in a year? Is it so I can say that I've read through the whole Bible? Mm-hmm. There's a ton of books I haven't read. Like, you were like joshing on people at church today.
Yeah.
But like, seriously, I haven't read Malachi.
Yeah.
I haven't read these books that you're talking about. Amos.
What? I had heard another preacher say one time, like, and obviously this is, you know, just speculation. We don't know that you're even going to interact with these people in any way when you're in heaven.
Yeah.
But he was like, what happens if you get to heaven and you run into like Nehemiah and he's like, what'd you think of the book? And you're like,
yeah.
Yeah. But there's a lot of that stuff where it's like, yeah, we don't know. We haven't read those. Like, we haven't spent time reading those things.
Yeah.
Because they're difficult, and it feels like sometimes like it's a chore. But that was even in Malachi today. He says, like, the people are saying, like, how tiresome it is to do these things in the temple. And it's like, God's like, if you feel like it's a chore, then he's like, you're not doing it for the right reasons.
I've been there, bro. I was there recently. Like, I'll be honest, following Jesus is tiresome sometimes. Because I just want to do the things I want to do. I want to watch porn. It makes me feel good. I want to smoke weed. It makes me disconnect. I want to do these things. I want to do these things. Because it's hard. It's easier to do those things than to follow God. It breaks my heart, bro. Because it's like, why can I? It's like the questions the kids will ask you, like, God, why did you make it so hard for me to follow you?
Yeah.
But that's not the truth, bro.
Yeah.
God doesn't make it hard for us to follow him. He says his burden is light. His yoke is light.
Yeah. Well, it's like Paul says, the things that I want to do, I don't do. And the things that I don't want to do, I do.
Yeah, but where does that leave you, bro?
Yeah.
I want to ask Paul that question. Well, where did that leave you?
That's Romans 7. But then where that leaves you is Romans 8, but thanks be to God, who through Jesus Christ our Lord. Like, that's where it leads you.
Yeah, but then I see, like, YouTube shorts. I saw Bryce Crawford, and I don't know if I agree with this. He's like, because it would take some nuts to say this. He says, if you're only giving 99% of yourself to God, and you're leaving that 1% out, he's, like, essentially saying you're not in the fullness of God.
Hmm.
And I was like, who can say that they give 100% of themselves to God?
Right.
When Jesus says to John, he says, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? I take that as he's telling John, like, you can't love me like I love you.
Oh, when he's talking, it's Peter. He says to Peter.
Peter.
Yeah,
that's right.
He says, but he says, like, a different word of love.
Yeah.
Like, he's talking about something that we are not even capable of.
Right.
So and Peter's, like, you know, just going through the motions.
Yeah. And that's how I take that. I'm like, yeah. I explained that to these guys. And it was cool when the counselors talked about, like, go down those rabbit holes. I was like, and I explained to these guys a lot of rabbit holes. And that was one of them where it seems like a rabbit hole, but it's like God, like Jesus is literally telling his disciples who knew him in the flesh.
Yeah.
That you can't love me like I love you.
Yeah.
Where does that leave us?
Hmm.
How can we give 100% of ourselves to God? Can we?
Not in this life, I don't think. I'm not a Nazarene, so I don't think that's possible.
You're an idiot.
Shout out to my Nazarene pastor friends who I'm just dogging on. No, that's, it's tough. It is tough. I don't think it we can only, but nothing we can do. We are not doing anything to be able to be good enough or to earn what God has given us, but instead everything that we do is in response to what he's done,
right,
and what he's given us.
Yeah, not for him but from him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, I always thought those, like, little idioms were corny, like where you would say, like, because you do
not
a lot.
For grace but from grace.
Yeah, I thought those were corny, but I was reading Romans yesterday and I was like, wait, Paul literally does this.
Yeah,
Paul literally does this in his letters. Yeah. So I'm safe now with doing,
right?
I do that all the time where I'll say, like, a word, then I'll say, like, a stronger word and, like, a stronger word. Yeah. To really, like, nail it down. And I'm like, where does that come from? Is that like Baptist sense in me or what? But Paul literally does that. Yeah, but that's hard, man. Even after leaving church camp, I'm not questioning myself as much as, like, when I left from Honduras, because, like, I get back from Honduras and I'm, like, trying to change everything at once. And Adam, the church counselor, told me, he was like, don't try to do it all at once, bro.
Yeah.
He's like, slow down on the weed and give up the porn.
Yeah.
I haven't smoked weed since I got back.
Well, he said if you try to tackle all of your problems all at once, then you're going to fail. You're not going to be able to tackle it all, but you can get victory over one area of your life.
Yeah.
And then work on the next and work on the next.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at, bro. You told me yesterday when I sent you that thing, I got the Covenant Eyes thing and I'm like done with it. I have no other way to look up porn or nothing. I don't even want to do it.
Yeah.
You said that was a good first step, and I almost jokingly said back to you, like, you mean like my 324th step or something
that? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because I've tried so many things and tried so many things, but it's like once I fail and fail and fail, I start seeking comfort in other things. Then I pick weed back up.
Well, and there's just like this human inherent nature to want to be... When we fail at something, to not to give up on everything else, because it's like, well, if I can't do that, then why do I even do anything? Like, you know, this is something that I struggle with, like my physical health, and like coming back from this vacation and then camp, where I really don't, neither one of those, I really had much control over, like what there was to eat,
right,
and. In that, I would like eat more because I'm like, well, I'm already eating this stuff that's not good for me. So why? And we do that. And then like it would be very easy for me to come back and just be like, well, then why do I even care what I eat? Because I put on all this weight now. And it's like it'd be easy for me to just like give up. But instead, I have to turn around and be like, well, no, I'm just going to press in harder and take it one step at a time and try to find what can I tackle first. And first thing is, tomorrow I need to get back into the gym.
Yeah.
Start there. And then the next week I need to start like really focusing in on how I'm eating again.
Yeah.
And just take baby steps and not let that little defeat be a complete loss of the war, you know?
Yeah, it's like in Revelation chapter 2 when Jesus is talking to the church in Ephesus and they're going too far in what they're doing, which is almost a good thing. But they go too far in it, and Jesus is like, hold up.
Yeah.
Go back, find your first love.
Yeah.
Start again. That's it for us.
Yep.
When God gives us these reality checks, he puts this church camp in my life right at a point where I'm like boiling down. He's like, okay, let's start over again. And it's not like I'm starting completely over. There's things in that time that I've kicked, things that I've learned, things that I've become comfortable with and intentional with. But I still have to go back and start over and work on these other things. And I feel like our life is like a revolving door of going back, starting over, going back, starting over, until we're just clean.
Yeah.
But tell me if I'm wrong. So far, I haven't met anybody that's just clean.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
That's good, man. I'm so, like, I feel like, I know this was a good podcast, but I feel like I'm so drained. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I still feel just so drained. But, you know, for us, it's different. But I always think of when I do a lot of counseling in like one big, like a week where I'm counseling people all the time or something like that, I always feel like, obviously it's different because Jesus had power of his own that left him.
Yeah.
But you know, when he talks about like, when the lady grabs the hem of his garment,
and he feels
feel
the power,
leave him. I feel that sometimes when I'm like deep in these like heavy counseling sessions, but it's not my power leaving me. It's the Holy Spirit's power going through me.
Yeah.
That's just exhausting.
Yeah.
And it like, it'll leave you just like completely worn out. You know, that SpongeBob meme where he's just like naked and he's just like, that's how I feel sometimes, man. Just like I've bore my soul to people and like been vulnerable and let God's power move through me. It's not my words, not my advice, because none of that would be worth anything, but like letting God speak through me. And then it's just like at the end of it, I'm so exhausted, just like
And even after, bro, I can't stop thinking about these kids, bro.
Yeah.
About the things they're going through. Because they're back in it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that weighs heavy on your heart, bro. Mm. But that gives you purpose, dude.
Yeah.
It gives you an intentionality. I'm now intentionally, when I pray, I've never been like a prayer journal, like prayer for people guy.
Yeah.
But now every time I pray, I can't not think about these kids. I can't not think about these people that are dealing with real life things that they shouldn't be dealing with. Mm. And it's burdensome on your heart, on my heart. But we talk about this a lot, where like we are supposed to bear one another's burdens.
Yeah,
these kids exactly. don't want to be a burden on anybody.
Right.
There was one kid that was going through some stuff with his family, and he didn't want to be a burden on his family, so he didn't let any of the information out.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, bro, I want you to let your burdens out on us.
Yeah.
I want to carry your burdens with you, because we're going to carry these burdens together. It makes it lighter for them, a little heavier for us, but God has built us. He's sanctifying us to be able to hold those burdens. And what to do with those burdens? What do we do with those burdens? We take them to God with you.
Right.
When I prayed for kids on that walk, I didn't pray for them. I prayed with them.
Yeah, exactly.
We came to God together because we're one. The church is one.
Yeah.
And we have all these different sects of the church. This is what this week opened my eyes to, is like, there's like so many different like parts of the church, the recovery thing we do, the kids, the adults, the old people, the young people in the church with families. There's like so much going on, but we all bear those burdens together. If there's a father in the church, a single father in the church, we all bear that burden.
Yeah.
If there's a kid struggling in that church, we all bear that burden. And it just, it doesn't feel happy, but it feels right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's, you're exactly right about that. I think we can sometimes worry too much about ourselves.
Yeah.
That we lose track of the fact that we're supposed to be carrying each other's burdens. And we can do things like, well, what about my burden?
Yeah.
It's like, well, give it up.
Yeah, give it up.
Yeah.
Give it up.
Stop holding on to it. Yeah, that's really good.
Praise God, man.
Man. That's a lot of heavy conversation.
Especially for two heavy guys.
And that's the truth. And God's truth won't back down. And neither should you. Stay relentless, stay aggressive, and above all, stay focused. For God.
Amen. It's been too long.
I remember this.